حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ولقد كان لكم في رسول الله أسوة حسنة، صلوات على محمد وعلى محمد. The Seerat of the Prophet is our subject, and Allah had commanded the Messenger 3 years after the first revelation was sent, Fasda bima tu'mar, declare openly what has been, what you have been ordered to. Wa'arid anil mushrikeen, and ignore the mushrikeen. Ignore them, turn away from them. Because obviously when you're going to say the truth openly, the mushrikeen, the idolaters, those who have made idols for themselves, are going to oppose you. And even before they oppose you, they are going to start to take you as a joke and ridicule you. And that's why Allah says, right after He gave the declaration, or He gave the order to make the declaration openly, He said, وَكَفَيْنَاكَ الْمُسْتَهْزِئِينَ, we are enough for those people who are going to make fun of you. We will deal with them. We will take care of them. You don't do anything to them, we will do it. So, right after that, you see that the Messenger went, at first invited his relatives to come, and they heard the message, and then he invited the people of Makkah. And both of them, as he did it, then you see right away the first opposition began. The first person to oppose the Prophet openly was Abu Jahl. Hisham ibn Amr was his name, and he was one of the elite of Makkah. He was one of the chiefs of the Quraysh. And right after the Messenger had made the declaration to of Islam to the people, right after that you see that he himself began to pray near the Kaaba. He himself began to pray near the Kaaba. He still forbidded the Muslims from praying out in the open. They, meaning that they were ordered only to pray at the Islamic Center. Right? While he himself went out and prayed near the Kaaba in front of others. And here's the thing that happens, right? You see, when you look at this behavior of the Prophet, he has made it clear that at the beginning of your tabligh and your propagation of Islam, when people do not know about Islam, then it's necessary that when you want to give the message of Islam, that you should be able to answer what you are doing and what you are believing in. You see, there was a lack of trust on the part of the Prophet that the Muslims, if they prayed outside, people will inquire what you are doing and they wouldn't be able to explain themselves. See, they wouldn't be able to explain themselves. You know, okay, what are we doing? You know, this is our prayer. Right? And hence, the Prophet did not allow them to pray openly. He said, no, you all still pray at the Islamic center of Arqam, right? That was the first Islamic center. There was no mosque. Before any mosque was built, there were Islamic centers. Right? Places where people used to go and pray. Where Muslims were told to go and pray. In Mecca, it was the house of Arkam. That was known as Darul Arkam. That was the first Islamic center in Islam. It wasn't a masjid. It was an Islamic center. That's where the Muslims were told to go and pray. That you go and pray there. But after Allah ordered that, here you see the messenger that you declare Islam openly, after that, the Prophet used to go out and pray openly. And for us, it is also a lesson that when you are in a situation where people will get the wrong idea of you praying, then to pray in that situation is not the seerat of the Prophet, is against the seerat of the Prophet. You go to the airport and say, I'm going to show everyone I'm a Muslim. I'm going to pray right here where everyone can see me, and then they can arrest me. This is not helping Islam. This is how the Prophet at that time said, no, you all don't pray, I will pray. Because when Allah ordered me to inform Islam to the people, when I will pray and people will come to me, then I can defend Islam. And if I can defend it, if I'm in any sort of hardship, then Allah has promised me He's going to take care of those who make fun of me. Right? Because what happened is that if Muslims pray, and if they prayed openly, then if someone, if they come and says, you know, what the hell are you doing? You say, what the hell do you care? You know? And that's the reply they'll give. The hell, who are you to test me? You know? So, with ignorance, they'll show their ignorance. They're not alim yet. Right? They just became Muslim. Right? They just became Muslims. Right? They are what you would call companions. They're not alim yet. Right? When they will be alim, they can defend Islam. But still, they are still yet only companions. Right? Not more than that. And hence the Prophet did not trust them. Allah did not trust them, and hence they said, you know, you all pray hiddenly, I will pray openly. So the Prophet came out and prayed near the Kaaba. When he prayed near the Kaaba, everyone saw him praying there. And they were like, what is he doing? Now they heard the message that he said, and everyone was upset already at what he had said. Now, who's going to take a stand against him? Who's going to say, who's going to be the first person to throw the stone? Right? That is the issue now. So, you know, the one who took the honor of throwing the first stone was Abu Jahl. Abu Jahl, he came, and as he entered, and about Abu Jahl, I don't know if I explained last time I spoke here, but Abu Jahl was a person that was so arrogant, and he was the chief of the Quraysh, that if he, for example, if he wore a certain dress, no Meccan was allowed to wear that dress that day. Because he is wearing that dress. If he said a poem, then no one in Mecca was allowed to say that poem on that day. Because Abu Jahl had said it. Right? If he sat somewhere, then no one was allowed to sit in that position. Because Abu Jahl sat here. Why? So this was Abu Jahl. He was the boss. He was, you know, the man. He was everything in Mecca. And everyone also gave him that allowance. They also played along with him. You know, he's the man. You know, he's the boss. If he does this, that's it. You know, so everyone else also went along with him. This was Abu Jahl, his arrogance and his pride. And so, when Abu Jahl walked inside the area of the Kaaba, he saw the Prophet praying. He saw the Prophet praying, and he saw that the Prophet did not get up in respect of Abu Jahl. Right? And right away, he saw this, and everyone else now was looking at Abu Jahl, and now they were expecting fireworks. So here Abu Jahl just looked at that and looked at him, and he says, you know, how dare he not stand up when I'm around him? You know, obviously his name was Hisham ibn Amr. He didn't say Abu Jahl. I'm Abu Jahl. This is a term that Islam gave to him, right? And that's the name that stuck with him till the Day of Judgment, right? He was known as Abul Hikam, right? Father of wisdom, right? So he said that I am here, and he does not stand up for me, you know. So he warned the Prophet. He says, next time I see you praying here like this, then I will break your neck. This is my promise.
Wow.
Right? The next time I see you pray here, I'm going to break your neck. So, everyone is looking at that. Abu Jahl is making that remark. You know, he made the remark, and then, you know, the Prophet, he was there, and he didn't get disturbed by what Abu Jahl had said, but right away replied back to him and said, if you ever stop me from praying here, then I will make sure that you're destroyed here and in the hereafter. Okay, so now the challenge was set. Abu Jahl gave a challenge and the Prophet gave a challenge. Right? Abu Jahl gave a challenge, then Rasulullah gave a challenge. Now the meeting was set for the next day. Meeting was set for the next day, and the next day the Prophet came and began to pray. Now Allah speaks of this incident in the ayat of the Quran. The next set of revelations was revealed for Abu Jahl and this whole incident. This whole next set of ayats that were revealed. So if you see the history of revelation, at first, the first five ayat of Surah Iqra were revealed. Then after that, Surah Muddassir was revealed. Then now, after that, the ayat of inviting the people out openly was revealed. Then after that, the ayat of inviting the relatives was revealed. Then after that, now you see, when the opposition came, here, the next set of ayat, which are in Surah Alaq, right? The first five ayat were revealed in the cave. The rest of the ayat are about Abu Jahl. In Surah Alaq, after Iqra, right? After Iqra, when we look at this, we see that the next set of ayat are for Abu Jahl. And here Allah says, Kalla innal insana layatgha. Indeed, man has become rebellious. You know, meaning he has become a rebel. He thinks he's someone, right? An ra'ahu istaghna, because he sees himself without want or need. And he sees that I am needless of anyone. I am independent. Istaghna. Inna ila rabbika arruj'a. Surely your return is to Allah. Allah says that. Then, now these ayat, you see, are explaining this incident. He says, Araita alladhi yanha abdan iza salla. Did you see this man forbidding my servant when he's praying? Right? Abu Jahl came to him and said that you can't pray. You can't pray here. So Allah is saying, did you see him? Did you see him do that? Right? And then when the time came, and you see Rasulullah came there and he started to pray. Abu Jahl came, he saw that the Prophet is praying. Now everyone is expecting bloodshed. And Abu Jahl is going to do something now. And everyone's like, you know, hyping him up also. Look at this guy, he's praying, and you already challenged him. How dare he praise Because Abu Jahl is, I mean, he doesn't need any of that. He's already upset and angry. And he's being insulted right now. So now he says that I'm going to break his neck with my feet. And he took a stone, and I'm going to break his head with this rock. And he walked towards the Prophet. He walked towards the Prophet, and everyone seeing this, and everyone wants to see excitement now, you know, when there's going to be a fight. Everyone's like, a fight, you know, and everyone comes crawl. So all the people are around him now, and they all want to see the fight happening. So now when the fight is happening, Abu Jahl goes and starts to throw the rock. The rock is stuck to his neck. The rock is just stuck to his neck. Now he's trying to throw it. He's trying to take that hand off, but he can't. He wants to throw it, but he can't. And the Prophet is praying. The Prophet is still praying. He's throwing and throwing, and then it was like stuck into his neck. And everyone's like wondering, why is he dancing for?
Yeah.
You know, because that's how he looked like. You know, like he's trying to take the hand off his neck and the rock off his neck, and he's dancing. And everyone's like, you know, what's wrong with this guy? You know, do something. I mean, this and that. And he's like, can't do anything. And then when the Prophet stopped praying and Abu Jahl saw the Prophet stop praying, he called out to the Prophet and said, Muhammad, help me. He said, Muhammad, help me. And so the Prophet gestured to the rock fell on the ground. And Abu Jahl retraced his steps back. Right, retraced his steps back, and then everyone's like, what's wrong with you? You had him right there, you could have, you know, beaten him up. You just left him there. And so Abu Jahl said, you know, when I went close to him, I saw that there's a trench between me and him that was filled with fire. And there are two birds with huge claws waiting for me to come near. And Rasulullah had said that if Abu Jahl had taken one step towards me, the angels would have cut him into pieces. And right away, you see, after that, Abu Jahl was subdued. Now, all his haughtiness and arrogance was not there, and it was finished. Everyone saw it. Now, what answer is he going to give? He came back, he said, I don't have anything to do with him. Right? You see, right away, he was gone. So he was the first one to oppose him, but he wasn't the worst one to oppose him. He wasn't the worst one to oppose him. My friends, now, the next six people, right, the next six people who opposed the Prophet were the ringleaders of this whole mushrikeen. They were the chiefs of the Quraysh. Each one of them was from the elite of Makkah. And these people, they had their own ways, meaning they were arrogant, and that's already there. The arrogance of the Meccans was already known. The first one amongst them, right, and about him, the ayat of the Quran, Allah, he revealed 9 ayat about this guy. 9 ayats. His name was Walid ibn Mughayra. Walid ibn Mughayra. Walid ibn Mughayra, right, was a person who was obviously very arrogant. And his arrogance was because of the fact that he had a lot of children, a lot of sons, a big family, and he was wealthy. He's extremely wealthy and he had a lot of children. In those days, if you have a lot of children, then you naturally are proud. And Walid was very proud. And Allah speaks of him in this way. Right? He says that this is Walid. He had a lot of children and a lot of wealth. Allah, he speaks of him this way also. And this is in Surah Qalam, the pen. From ayat 10 to ayat 18 is about Walid ibn Mughayra. Ayat 10 to ayat 18. This was a person, see, Abu Jahl was subdued. Walid was not subdued. He openly used to mock the Prophet. He used to wait at the door of the Prophet in the morning, that when the Prophet used to come out, he would spit in his face. And he would make jokes about him everywhere he goes. He would go right behind him and he would make jokes to other people, taunt him, ridicule him, so that the Prophet would have a hard time just even opening his mouth.
Wow,
this is what Walid ibn Mughira, and he would be proud and he would just go around and he would do these things.
Wow.
The Prophet had a very hard time with him. So now Allah revealed these 9 ayat about Ali ibn Mughira. I mean, imagine that this person was important, that Allah had to dedicate 9 ayat for him. Right? And in these 9 ayat, Allah gave a personality profile of Ali ibn Mughira. Right? He made it very clear of who this person is. He says, وَلَا تُطِعْ كُلِّ حَلَّافٍ مَهِينٍ. Do not obey this oath-mongering lowlife. Right? حَمَّازٍ مَشَّاءٍ بِنَمِيمٍ. He's a scandal-monger and a defamer. He goes around defaming people, saying lies about people and making them look bad. That's him. مَنَّاءٍ لِلْخَيْرِ. He stops other from doing good. Anyone who wants to do good, you see, he stops him from doing good. مُعْتَدٍ أَسِيمٍ. He is a transgressor of any limits. He has no limits for himself. And he is sinful. He's a sinner. Right? عُتُلٍ. He's violent. He's hard-headed, violent. Right? بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ ذَنِيمٍ. He here until describes 8 qualities. 8 qualities he describes. Let me go through those qualities, right? So you understand them. Halaf means someone who takes a lot of oaths. You know, you see a lot of people, when they are liars, they need to take oath in order to convince others of what they are saying. They say, Wallahi. Wallahi. Right? And they swear. Wallahi. Why are they swearing all the time? Because they are liars. Because they are liars. Only liars swear all the time. They take the name of Allah so lightly. Right? They are the ones who do that. Otherwise, if you are honest, you don't need to take the name of Allah in order to convince others. Your honesty is enough. You know you're being honest. You don't need to take a swear. So halaf is something that is condemned in Islam. To take a lot of oath, oh, I swear this is the way. I swear this is the case. Why do you have to swear all the time? The reason you are swearing is because you yourself know that you are a liar. Right? You yourself know you are a liar. That's why you have to swear. Right? And this is the reason. Halaf is an attribute that is condemned in Islam. And Allah, He speaks about Walid in this way. He says that he is halaf. Takes a lot of oath. Maheen means a low life, despicable. Right? Hamaz means someone who, for example, slanders others. Right? There's a chapter in the Quran where Allah says, وَيْلٌ لِكُلِّ هُمَذَةِ اللُّمَذَى. Right? Woe unto every slanderer. Right? Slander, someone who says lies about others. Right? This is Hamaz. Masha'in bin Ami means he walks around saying wrong things or despicable things about others, putting others down, jokes about others. That's who he is. Manna'in lil khair means that he does not want anyone to do good, so he stops them from doing good. Right? And then he says Mu'tadin. Mu'tadin means someone who transgresses, right? Who has no limits, who is an extremist, in other words. Then after that he says, Athim, a sinner. Utulin, hard-headed, violent. 8 qualities he gives, and you know what? None of them affect Walid. I mean, Walid is just happy to hear these qualities. Yeah, so what? So what? So what?
President Bush.
Right? But the 9th one, the 9th one hits him hard. The 9th one hits him hard, the last one. He says, بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ ذَنِيمٌ. He has all these eight qualities, and on top of all of that, he's a bastard. On top of all of that, he's a bastard. He is born illegitimate. Now, for Walid ibn Mughira, and his arrogance about his background and everything, that hits him hard. He's like, wait a minute, I'm a cheapskate, liar, lowlife, despicable, everything, fine. But illegitimate? You know, how can that be? Walid was so upset when he heard this. Right? Walid was very upset when he heard this. And he said, why are you upset? He says, listen, I am the son of Mughira, I know this. But I also know the Prophet doesn't lie. You see, the honesty of the Prophet is such that even the enemies who are ridiculing him know that when he says something, there has to be truth in it. Walid was upset. And he says, there's only one person who can answer my doubt. And so he takes out his sword and goes to his mother. He goes to his mother and says, tell me. He puts his sword on her throat and says, tell me, who's my father?
He's a crazy guy. He's a crazy man.
He says, tell me, who's my daddy? And the mother sees the sword on the throat and says, son, listen to me. Listen to me. Your dad was a rich man, an influential man, but he was impotent. He could not have children. And your brother and his brothers wanted to take over his property. In order to protect your property from your brothers, I had a son through a slave of ours, and that's you. You are the son of our slave, not Mughira. Meaning that reality came out because Allah revealed the ayat. And now Walid ibn Mughira, that arrogance that he used to have, now you see, came down. And now he himself was hiding from others because everyone was looking at him, Ghaneem. And this was Walid, right? This was Walid. Allah, he makes a prophecy about this person, and he says, obviously he goes on to say, إِذَا تُطْلَى عَلَيْهِ آيَاتُنَا قَالَ أَسَاطِيرُ الْأَوَّلِينَ. One of the signs of Walid was that he used to say that whenever he used to hear the ayat of Allah, he said that this is, for example, fairy tales, old tales of old people, they mentioned, you know, long, long time ago this happened. You know, fairy tales. And that's how you used to make fun of the message. And how did you used to ridicule the Prophet? Allah, you know, he used to ridicule the Prophet by saying that, what, are we so low now that we're going to listen to an orphan? This orphan, he has no otherless orphan, we want to listen to him, this low life. That's how you used to speak of the Prophet. So Allah says, سَنَسِمَهُ عَلَى الْخُرْطُومِ. Khurtum is like the trunk of an elephant. You know that big trunk of an elephant? Allah used that to describe his nose and says, we will brand him on his khurtum, on his nose. You know, physically his nose was big. And Allah says that this is a khurtum and we are going to brand him there. Right? We are going to brand him there. And so happened. It so happened in both these cases of Abu Jahl and of Walid ibn Mughira. Both of these people, Allah made a promise. In the case of Abu Jahl, Allah said that we are going to drag him with his forelock and throw him into hell. In the case of Walid, he says we're going to brand him on his nose. And both of these things came true in the battle of Badr. Abu Jahl and Walid, both of them came out in the battle of Badr. And Abu Jahl was killed there, we know that. Abu Jahl was killed by Hamza. And so when he was killed after the battle, when all the dead bodies were being thrown in the hole, now the Muslims didn't know who these people were, and so they were dragging Abu Jahl by his hair. Right? And they threw him in the hole like that. Until the Prophet saw this is Abu Jahl and reminded the people that this is the prophecy that Allah had made, that he will throw him into the hellfire, into the pit with his hair and forelock. You see? And then the same thing happened with Walid ibn Mughirah. This Walid ibn Mughirah, when he came out, and Allah said that we are going to brand him on his nose, he was in the battle of Badr when one of the sword of the Muslims cut his nose. He cut his nose and he lived thereafter without a nose. And he was known around amongst the people as Noseless. And Allah had said that we're going to brand him on his nose. Allah made that prophecy, it came out true. In both these cases you see how Allah has promised the Prophet. You see, this was Walid ibn Mughirah. Right? Now he was one of the six ringleaders who were there. Right? The other six ringleaders were As ibn Wa'il, Aswad ibn Abdul Muttalib, Aswad ibn Abd Yahud, Qais ibn Halasala, ibn Qais. These six people were the ringleaders of those who used to ridicule the Prophet. All of these six used to be together, and they used to wait for the Prophet to come out of his house, and they used to make jokes about him, throw things at him, spit at him, until it was hard for the Prophet to go on. It was getting hard for the Prophet because these people were violent. Abu Jahl was not as bad as these people. You see, Abu Jahl had some reservations when it came to the Prophet. He had some reservation when it came to the Prophet. These people had no reservations. Now let me give you some examples so you know this. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. In the time of ignorance, when someone used to become an orphan, like an orphan type person, his mother, father died, he becomes an orphan. So the way it was that anyone who wants to claim the orphan can say that I am the caretaker of this orphan, then that orphan will belong to him, his wealth will also belong to him. Meaning that now he has to take care of him. If he doesn't want to take care, throw it out of his house, that's up to him. But he belongs to him. No one has the right to say that I want him. For example, if I see someone is an orphan, someone died, I can come and say, I'm going to take care of him. Now all of you do not have the right to say that, you know what, no, I'll take care of him. No. Whoever he says it first, the orphan will belong to him. That was the way. Now what happened was that there was an orphan who became orphan. When he became orphan, Abu Jahl, he claimed him. Now, he was a wealthy orphan. He had a lot of money. Abu Jahl claimed him. And he said, this orphan is mine. And obviously, because of that, the wealth of the orphan also went to Abu Jahl. And then, soon after that, when he took the wealth of the orphan, he kicked the orphan out of his house. Right, he kicked the orphan out of his house. This is how they used to deal. That's why Allah was so harsh against these people for how they dealt with orphans. He kicked the orphan out of his house. Now the orphan became homeless. All he had on him was the clothes on his back. And since Abu Jahl threw him out, no one would dare take him in. because Abu Jahl threw him out. That's it. If Abu Jahl does that, you don't cross lines with Abu Jahl. You know? So what happened is that Abu Jahl, now he was, you know, since he threw him out, no one wanted to take him in. This orphan lived homeless, looking for food wherever he can find it to eat. And he lived like this until the clothes that he had on his back, where it became so worn out that they also fell off his body. They also fell off his body. Now, not only was he homeless, but he was clothesless also. So he came to Abu Jahl. He said that, listen, give me some money so I can buy some clothes and hide myself. At least give me some money out of the money that my father left. Abu Jahl was like, get lost. Right? Get lost. So, you know, he came to the Kaaba, and obviously anyone who was in hard times and desperate times, they would usually approach the Kaaba and they would make their call there for help or whatever, anyone can help me. So the other Arabs there heard his cries and they knew who he was, but they wanted some excitement. So they said, hey, listen, the only one who can get something for you from Abu Jahl is his friend. Who's his friend? And they said, you see that person there? He's his friend. And they pointed to the Prophet. He said, you go to him and he's going to give you whatever you need from Abu Jahl. So he went to the Prophet. You know, these people were joking, you know, when they sent him there. They wanted him to go there and, you know, he'll be laughed at, whatever. So now they're expecting something to happen. So he went to the Prophet and said that, I need help from you. This is what happened. He informed the Prophet of the case. The Prophet said, all right, no problem. Come with me. And he went with the orphan. He went with him. He knocked on the door of Abu Jahl. The Prophet knocked on the door of Abu Jahl. Abu Jahl opened the door. And the only thing the Prophet said was that, go and bring his right, all of it, and give it to him. And Abu Jahl just went inside his house, brought all the wealth of the orphan out, and he just gave it to him. And the Prophet just said, okay, now you can go. You have your wealth, now you can go. It's your right. And the Prophet, now the friends, you know, who put the Prophet up to this, they came to Abu Jahl and said, what's wrong with you, man? What's wrong with you? You know? Is this how you deal? He's your enemy. He came to your house and you just gave him the wealth away? What's wrong with you? He said, I couldn't help it. He said, why not? He says, when the Prophet asked, when Muhammad asked me, then there are two men, they were pressing me from both sides. That I could not breathe. And they said that if I don't go and get it, they'll kill me like this. So Abu Jahl, right, was already subdued. Another case happening. A person came to sell camels. He had 3 camels with him and they were worth a lot of money. He fixed the price, a reasonable price of 1,000 for the camels. And he wanted to sell those camels. Unfortunately, Abu Jahl looked at the camels and he says, 50 each. When Abu Jahl said, 50 each, then after that, no one in Makkah would dare raise the price. Because Abu Jahl said 50, that's it. It's over. You know, now he has to sell those at 50. He cannot sell it for more. No one is going to give him more. Because Abu Jahl said so. And if anyone does give more, then he will have to cross Abu Jahl. Right? Now see the environment of Makkah there. This is what's happening. This is how Abu Jahl was. So now Abu Jahl, you know, when he set the price at 50, no one wanted to do this. He went around and around and around and everyone said, listen, Abu Jahl had said 50, that's all you're going to get. And he was like, you know, what kind of place is this? What kind of place is this? I came here to do business And this is how you're going to treat me? No one's going to come here and do business if this is the case. Right? And he's upset and all these things. And they said, you know, hey, listen, you know, again, there were some Arabs there, you know, who wanted to have some fun. So they said, you know what, there's only one person who can help you. Who's that? He says, you see that person over there, he can help you. Right? And it was the Prophet. So he came to the Prophet. He says that, listen, this is my story. Right? Abu Jahl, he said that he's going to buy the camel at 50. No one is willing to pay more than 50. Now, friends, you see, here, the messenger, right, Rasulullah says, all right, you come with me. He took him there. He knocked at the door of Abu Jahl, asked Abu Jahl to come out. Abu Jahl came out and said that, listen, Abu Jahl, I'm going to buy these three camels from him for 1,000 apiece. Here's 3,000, and I'm giving it to him, and these camels are mine. I made the deal with him now. Right?
Yeah, Rasulullah.
Now, all the people, right? All the people are now waiting for Abu Jahl, you know, for fireworks and bloodshed. You know, I mean, even if the Prophet had gone somewhere else and made a deal, and if Abu Jahl knew about this, he would be upset. But he knocked on his door, brought him out, challenged him and said, listen, I'm making this deal, try to stop me. I mean, he's like really showing him up. Right? He's like really showing him up. He's saying, okay, you know, are you going to stop me? Come on, stop me. I'm making this deal. Right? And he didn't, you know, Abu Jahl's like looking at him, you know, looking at him. And his friends are like, you know, you are Abu Jahl, the chief of Makkah. You can do what you like. No one would dare look up to you. What's wrong with you? He challenged you in your face and you couldn't say anything. He says, how could I? How could I? And there were two spearmen holding their spears in my heart, and they said, if you move one step forward, this is going in your heart. You see, my friend, understand this. Here, these are facts of history, right, that are there. And Abu Jahl was already subdued. He couldn't do anything to the Prophet. He was already there, so he wasn't the big problem. The big problem was these six people. These were the big problem. They used to openly defy the Prophet, say bad things about the Prophet, ridicule the Prophet. Now, the only thing, my friends, understand this. Allah had said what? That declare Islam openly. He said, Fazda bima tu'mar. Declare openly what you have been ordered to. So when he was ordered to be declared openly, so then Allah made a promise to the Prophet. He says, وَكَفَيْنَاكَ الْمُسْتَهْزِيِينَ. We are enough of protectors against those who will make fun of you. Don't do anything to them. We will take care of them. So Abu Jahl, you saw how he was taken care of. Now the next six, the ringleaders of these people who used to make fun of the Prophet, they, how are they dealt with? So now Allah made the promise, he has to keep the promise. These people are making the Prophet's life miserable. He cannot give the message of Islam without being taunted or ridiculed by these six. What can he do? So now Allah sent Jibreel. Allah sent Jibreel to the Prophet. And he said, Ya Rasulullah, I came to fulfill Allah's promise. Allah sent me. Now tell me, who are these people making fun of you? Who are these people making fun of you? Now obviously the Prophet didn't want to say the names, anything like that. It was around that time that the first person, As ibn Wail, was walking by. And he said something to the Prophet. And Jibreel asked the Prophet, is he one of them? The Prophet just bowed down, didn't say anything. Jibreel understood this is one of them. So, he made a gesture. And this man, As ibn Wail, started walking. And he stepped on a small thorn. He stepped on a small thorn. And it hurt him so much that in the middle of the bazaar, he shouted out saying, Muhammad's God has killed me. I can understand this. You see, the situation was that Islam is a new message. Islam is saying there's only one God, that is Allah. And they have all these idols over here. These people who are the chiefs of Makkah and Quraysh, these people are now making all these claims and ridiculing the Prophet. So now when he made a statement like that, then all the people who are in between now become more confused. Maybe Muhammad's God is right. You know, and he was the thorn went inside of him, and he died from that little thorn. It's one of them, my friends. All these six, you see. Now Allah had sent Jibreel. He said, "Go ahead and do what you need to do in order to get rid of these six." I promised the Prophet. I said, "I'm going to protect him." So the next person came, Aswad ibn Abdul Muttalib. You know, and when he walked by the Prophet, he said something to him. You know, like laughing, this and that. Laughing at him and this, he said something to him. When he said something to him, Jibreel said, "Is he one of them?"
No.
And the Prophet didn't say anything. And he didn't say anything, so at that time, he made a gesture. He knew this is one of them. He made a gesture. That person, while walking, became blind. While walking, became blind and he crashed into a wall, and he stood by the wall and started banging his head on the wall. And he was shouting out to his slaves that, "Help me! Save me!" Now the issue is this. In those days, the rules was that if the slave even accidentally touches the master, he has to be executed.
Wow.
Right? So the slaves are looking at him, banging his head on the wall. And he's saying, "Help!" And they're saying, "This might be a trick question. We shouldn't be touching him. We shouldn't be touching him. Just watch him until he breaks his head on the wall and dies there." And then they're wondering, he's dead. And still they don't touch him. They go and inform, "Listen, master died there, banging his head on the wall." Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Ali. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Ali.
Right? So this was Aswad ibn Abdul Muttalib. The next person was Aswad ibn Abdul Yahud. This Abdul Yahudi, this person, when Jibreel saw him, he said, "Is this one of those people?" So all the Prophet said in his case was that, I made a dua that he should not die until he sees his son die. So Jibreel said, "Fine." So what happened is that, he put a leaf, right, in the eyes of this person and he became blind. And he lived blind until the Battle of Badr. When his son died and the news of his son came to him and he heard that his son has died, then he killed himself and committed suicide. I couldn't bear it. Why? This is Aswad ibn Abdul Yahud. The next person was Qais ibn Salasalah. This also was a person. You see, all these people were the chiefs of Quraysh. Their arrogance and the pride is up there. They have their rules and customs in such a way that their arrogance is kept in the eyes of people. This is how they are. And when Jibreel, he asked the Prophet about this person, the Prophet didn't say anything, so Jibreel understood this is the one. So he made a gesture and changed his features in his face. Now he looked different. He was walking back home and he looked different now. He walked back home and now, you see, he got into his house. He was already exhausted and tired, so he went to the main place of his bed, his sofa, and he sat there. You know, the drink was next to him. He started drinking and he sat there. Now thinking about what happened in the market and all these things, you know. Now the whole household is looking at this. Who is this guy on the sofa? All the slaves are looking at him. Who the hell is he? If our master knows about it, he's going to come and beat us up also. And how dare we let someone else get into his bed? So they came and started beating him up. Now he got angry at them. He said, "You beat me up," and he started hitting them. So now they got more upset. They said, "Master will truly kill us because now he beat us and we didn't do anything to him. We have to do something now." So they all started beating him up until he was killed by them. Until he was killed by them. And this guy, who was so arrogant that he would not allow his children to come near his bed, was killed at the hands of his own slaves and his own people. Wow. You see, Allah, He wants to give them death, but He wants to give them an ignoble death. Right? Something that is low, not something that is, you know, someone can be proud of. No. You're going to die, but you're going to die bad. Right? And the next one was Ibn Qais. He also is the same thing. He was walking by, Jibreel said, "Is he one of them?" He said, "Yes." He said, "All right." He ate a fish at the next store. He ate a fish. The fish was poisoned. And his stomach started to bloat. In the market itself, it started to bloat. It bloated and everyone was looking at him getting, you know, bloated. Bloated and bloated. And he was on the ground now in pain. And everyone was like looking at him, what's going on with him. Until his stomach burst open and he died there. Right? He died there. You know, this is a disease that dogs get. Dogs, when they have this disease, their stomach bloats up and it's burst. They die because of that. This is that humiliating death that Allah gave this person who was the chief of Quraysh. You know? And he died there. Dead. So now with all of that, now the last person, Walid ibn Mughira, we came back to him. I said that he was so arrogant, he died because of his arrogance also. How did he die? He was walking by a, where they make arrows. So when you make the arrows, there are wood chips that fall down. As he was walking by, a wood chip went into his sole, into his leg. It went into his leg, he started bleeding. But he was so arrogant that he did not want to bend down to take it out. He didn't want to bend down to take it out. He would rather feel the pain and walk with that pain, but bend down in front of others so that they see him bending down. And he walked like that to his house. He went on his bed. He was so exhausted that he fell asleep, did not take it out. He was bleeding until night, when his daughter saw that it's wet, and she saw that this was his blood that he is sleeping in. And he died in that. These are the six people who made fun of the Prophet, my friends. Who made fun of the Prophet. And Allah made this an example. And He says, وَكَفَيْنَاكَ الْمُسْتَهْزِيِينَ We are going to protect you from those who will make fun of you. If they disagree with you, it's fine. If they don't believe in you, it's fine. If they turn away from you, it's fine. But if they ridicule you, then we will take care of them in front of you. My friends, understand this. And this is a message for everyone. Right? That if you disagree with the Prophet or Ahlul Bayt, then still you're alright. If you don't believe in them, you still have a chance until you die. But the day you start ridiculing the Prophet or Ahlul Bayt or anyone who holds the flag of truth, then Allah is going to take care of you in the same way. If you are going to ridicule the Prophet and ridicule Ahlul Bayt or ridicule the leader of Islam, then the way that Allah sent Jibreel and He showed this, He says, now you are dealing with me. You are dealing with me and I will take care of you. And I will give you a death that is so ignoble. My friends, this is what happens. This is the reason why how people who make fun, and you can see it with your own experience, those who are the leaders of Islam, those who are the leaders of Islam, when you make fun of the leaders of Islam, those who are holding the flag of truth, then you know that Allah is sending you a death that is so despicable that even your own people will look at you and say it's shameful. This is the death that has happened. You can see it all around. It doesn't happen to anyone. It's not about Muslim, non-Muslim. Even our own people I have seen. Even ulama I have seen who made fun of the leader. You will see how Allah has humiliated them and made them die in humiliation. You can see it yourself, those who die in humiliation. Why are they dying like that? Because Allah, now when you ridicule the Prophet, the Imams or the leader, now you are making it personal for Allah. And Allah has said that now we are going to protect you. My friends, this is the reason. If you want to disagree, there's nothing wrong with disagreeing. But if you make fun of ulama, then, and those ulama who are the leaders, who are leading the Muslims, and who are holding the flag of Islam, then that is asking Allah to give us a humiliating death. The hellfire is way gone. Yes, it's going to come. But the death here will be humiliating. Your life will be humiliating. Allah will not let you have any respect. Because this is something that Allah takes personally. And we can imagine it from here. That this is something that Allah gave the example and made it known to everyone that this is the only case. Abu Jahl, right? He opposed the Prophet. But when he saw something happening, he stepped away. He went to battle with him and he died there. But dying in a battle is still, you can say, respectful. Dying by the sword is still respectful. At least he died fighting. And this is the reason why when you are going to oppose those and ridicule those who stand up for the truth and who are holding the flag of Islam, then you're asking Allah to now humiliate me in this life as well as the hereafter. So this is a lesson that we can learn from the seerah of the Prophet until now. So I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us a tawfiq and a blessing to be on the right path. Give us the wisdom to understand His guidance. Hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Make us His helper when He comes. Wa akhir al-da'wan, alhamdulillah, rabbil alameen. Any questions? Yes.
You were saying it before about during the time of the Prophet that he didn't want them to pray outside, but for us, when we decide to pray outside, is that okay?
Yes, the thing is that, again, we have to be also looking at that. You know, it's not haram, right? It's not haram to pray outside in the public, but you have to see the situation and the time and then decide if this is the right thing to do. Right? Because you don't have time to answer people. You don't have the environment to answer their doubts. Right? Or, you know, for example, if they say something, if they make an opinion about you, you have no way to clear that. So you are making the wrong opinion about Islam, right, when you see that. But yes, if you see it in a different environment where if you pray, it will be helpful, then it's different. But if you go to an airport and you know that everyone's like tense, right? Everyone's tense and you know they're already, like for example, you know, on edge. And then you say that, you know what, I'm going to, you know, really make them go over the edge. Right? Now let me say Allahu Akbar loudly so everyone in the hall hears this. So obviously this is asking for trouble.
Running errands, and you know the time for prayer is now, and you're somewhere where you could pray, but you might see, but it's like the time you'd rather pray than...
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, if it's outside of those situations where you are at your work or your school or your college, where you are there every day, It's one thing. In the airport, you're not there every day.
Right.
You're only there once in a while to travel, and no one knows you, and hence, you know, when you do something, you cannot answer any doubt, or you cannot answer any inquirer. But at school, when you go there, or you're at work, you know, there are people who will ask you, then you have time to be with them, to inform them, to answer their questions. Right? But when you're in a place where you cannot answer and you know the only thing you're doing is really making the people get edgy and upset and, you know, this and that. So this is not something that is helping in a situation like this. 15 years ago, probably, right, where we used to pray outside, and there was not that, this, what do you call that, paranoia about Islam. Right? But after 9/11 and what's going on right now and all these things, there's a lot of paranoia, and you're asking for trouble in that case. Yes.
So if you have it, you have it the time of the prayer. You don't pray that time, and then if you are in the airport, you don't have a choice. If you don't pray, you're afraid to be cut off or something like that.
No, of course not. You know, that's not the way. Yes, if there is, if your prayers, if you're going to lose your prayers, then you have to pray. Right? You know, then you have to find a place and pray. Yeah, they have places where you can get and pray. Right? You can look for those chapels and this and that and go there and pray. Instead of, you know, at the gate where everyone is ready to board. Right, and you're making your last prayers before you get on board, you know? No. Any questions? All right, now about